You're listening to What She Said, a podcast for bloggers and creatives hosted by me, Lucy Sharif, a freelance journalist living in London. Each week, I interview different women in blogging and the online world, getting their best blogging tips and advice, and a little bit of gossip too. Thanks for listening. Welcome to episode 9 of What She Said, where I chat to Beverly from Pack Your Passport. Fun fact, we hadn't actually met each other before, so when we had this call, it was the first time we'd even spoken to each other, which could have gone terribly, but it didn't, luckily. We chatted about the blogging landscape, how it's changed over the years. Beverly shares her journey to becoming a full-time freelancer and running her own company in freelance social media management, PR, copywriting, her background in digital marketing. And then she just casually drops some incredible SEO tips, some amazing Instagram stories tips as well. That's right at the end, so make sure you stay listening. I know you will anyway, but all in all, it was just a super fun chat, packed to the brim with amazing tips and tricks for your blog. I know you'll love it. And also, if you want to get to know me a little bit better, I admit to some shameful SEO secrets, which is sort of in the middle of our chat. Some things that I have been doing wrong for years and have only just discovered how to do correctly. So it's pretty funny. So I hope you enjoy it.
Thanks for being part of the podcast, Beverly. Do you want to just explain to us, if anybody who doesn't know who you are, which they will, your blog and how you came to into your blogging journey?
Well, thank you for having me on. Basically, I started blogging in 2011. I'd moved to Australia in 2010 on a work and holiday visa. And to be perfectly honest, I didn't know what blogs were. I'd never read a blog at all. But in 2011, I was living in Melbourne and working in a little cafe. And one afternoon, I went to do some research about a trip that I was going to go on and happened upon a blog. And I thought, do you know what? I love traveling and I'm not bad at writing. Maybe I could do this.
Do you remember what blog it was?
I think it might have been Adventurous Kate.
Yeah.
I think Adventurous Kate is the first travel blog that I ever read.
Me too.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
she's really, really great. And I looked at it and I thought, I mean, I wasn't hoping to replicate what she does at all, because at that time I was actually traveling, with my now ex-boyfriend. Mm-hmm. But I thought, yeah, I love traveling and I love writing and I'm not bad at writing. Maybe I could do this. So in true Beverly fashion, I jumped straight in without, you know, giving it a second thought. literally just sat, I didn't even have my own laptop. I just sat in an internet cafe drinking cocktails in a really dark basement bar. Yeah, and I just got on Blogger, basically. I think it was Blogger. Yeah, I just got on Blogger, really bad theme.
That was Google one, wasn't it, Blogger?
Yeah, the Google one. Yeah, so I basically just did all that. And then I got on Twitter. I'd never been on Twitter before. I got a Facebook page. I was barely on Facebook anyway. And that's kind of how it all started. And then I continued just using Blogger for about 6 months.
Yeah.
And then decided that, you know, I actually really like this. And I knew that I'd built kind of a really nice community up on Twitter. There were quite a few. So Monica was one of the first people that I followed on Twitter, and we became friends because of that.
Yeah. Monica Stott, the travel hack, for anybody who doesn't know.
Yeah.
She's mentioned, I think, in every single podcast episode.
She's great.
She's awesome.
There were a few kind of bloggers at that time that I was really, good friends with on Twitter. And I thought, I'm really enjoying this. I really want to do this properly. So, I contacted another blogger who kind of put together a proper website for me, and I bought the domain. And, that's kind of how I started.
And that was all when you were still in Australia?
Still in Australia, yeah. So 2011. I moved to New Zealand in June 2012, and moved to Auckland and just continued the blog really. I still needed, I wasn't making much money from it and I still needed to, work. So I lived in New Zealand for a year and then I moved back to the UK and I thought I'm going to move to London. So I moved to London and, got a job as a PR consultant, which I absolutely loved. And still, yeah, continued to run the blog. And then after 3 years of being in London, I decided to move back to Leeds because that's where I went to uni. And, yeah, it was, yeah, last June. So it kind of got to a point where I absolutely love London, but, I just wanted a place of my own. I wanted to leave, and I knew that in the future I wanted to go freelance as well. And I knew from being the person I am that I wouldn't be able to do that in a shared house. I'd need my own space. Yeah. So in January this year I went freelance, and here we are.
It's super exciting. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your freelance career, because so the blog post that you wrote, was it this week or last week? The freelance mistakes that you made, the things that you ignored. The rules that people say. I found that really, really interesting because I'm freelance as well, and I didn't realise that I was actually completely breaking these rules also.
Well, I didn't either until I read so much. I kind of had zero notice about going freelance because I unfortunately lost my job, and I kind of thought, you know what, now would be a perfect time to do it. I've always wanted to work for myself. I got a bit of leeway, you know, financially. Why don't I try it? So I went freelance with basically one day's notice, because I unfortunately lost my job, but I thought because I had a bit of leeway financially. So I thought, you know what, I've always wanted to do this. Now would be a really perfect time to do it. You know, I've got this opportunity. I still looked for other jobs just to, you know, keep my foot in, but I just kind of went for it. But I did loads of research. I read up on what I need to do and how to sort, like being self-employed out, that kind of thing. And so much of the advice was, you know, you need somewhere out of your home or separate from your home to work. And I was like, well, I can't afford that. I've actually started freelancing, and my flat, I live in a small one bedroom flat. The only space for my desk is between my lounge and my kitchen in this massive kind of like open plan room. So I was like, well, like, sorry, can't do that. Then it's something like, say for 3 months, I was like, well, I know I'm going to lose my job, so sorry, can't do that one either. And there was so much advice that made me feel as though, I was doing it wrong. And I think when you're freelance, there is no right or wrong. I think you have to do what feels right for you. And that's why I wrote that post. And I just, because I didn't want other people to feel, as though they had this rule book to follow, when really, when you go freelance, the rule book's kind of like, you know, throw it in the bin.
Yeah,
and do what you want and do what works for you, which I'm sure you've done as well.
Yeah, you just have to find your own rhythm as well, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Some people really, really like working from their bed in their pajamas, and other people really like to get up and start the day as if they were kind of commuting and all the rest of it, and put makeup on. I personally sometimes, especially if I have like a day of pitching, I feel like I have to put lipstick on. I don't know why.
It makes you feel as though you're like a, I don't know, in inverted commas, a proper work, like a proper person.
A proper person. That is a really good tip for everyone out there. Man, woman, whoever's listening, put some lipstick on.
Stick some red lipstick on. It makes you feel so confident.
Yeah, it really does.
So
your background in PR, which must be absolutely invaluable as a blogger as well as a freelancer, what kind of gems have you gleaned from your time in digital PR?
Oh God, that's a massive question. So when I worked in PR, it was very much SEO based digital PR. So the content that we were creating was very much it was based on data. It was data led, research led. We'd make these beautiful pieces for clients that were interactive. And then I would go out and try and get them coverage. So, that's really where a lot of my experience came from. And it was only when I moved up to Leeds, and got a job that was more traditional, PR, that I really did that side of things. But I think it's really interesting having worked on both sides. So obviously I've been a blogger since 2011. And I had no PR experience then. I'd done my degree at Leeds Uni, in media and marketing. Mm-hmm. But of course, so much has changed since I graduated. Yeah, so I graduated in 2007. And obviously the principles behind marketing will never change. People will always buy things for a reason, and you sell to people in a certain way for a reason. But the method in which we're receiving all of these, you know, marketing messages has completely changed. When I was at uni, there was no Twitter. You know, there's no Facebook. Really, I'm really showing my age now.
No, I think you're the same age as me. I remember those times.
Yeah, I think we are. So the way that we receive these messages is completely different. And there were no blogs, really. It just wasn't a thing. So I've kind of had to teach myself. But because it's something that I'm really interested in, PR and social media, it not only helps with being a blogger, because you can see things from both sides. And obviously now that I do PR freelance and also social media freelance as well, it really, really helps having just been really passionate about it and just kept on learning about it, basically.
Just speaking about just blogging, you've obviously been blogging since way back when. What have you found have been the biggest stumbling blocks for you along your journey?
Do you know what? I think the biggest stumbling block for me has been consistency.
Really?
Yeah, I think that I would probably be further along in blogging if I'd just kept it up, if I'd committed early on to doing at least one post a week. Mm. And I wish I'd done that from the start, but as you probably know, life gets in the way, and sometimes you just don't feel like blogging, you don't feel like writing. And I feel as though I didn't really have my business hat on for a very, very long time. I do now, and I try to be as consistent as possible. But when you've got a full-time job, I had for most of the time that I've run in my blog, it's difficult to commit sometimes, definitely.
Yeah, it's really hard. Funnily enough, I was talking to Sophie Cliff last mm-hmm. night, and I was asking her how the hell she manages with a full-time job.
Sophie,
I do not understand.
Every day, for the most part.
I know.
She's on fire. I love that.
Yeah, it's incredible. I couldn't do it. I'm the same as you. I just couldn't do it. And what have been the, I don't know, light bulb moments along the way as well? Because I feel like when you're blogging, especially when, as you started out, while you were traveling, I did the same. You really are properly winging it. And there tends to be a couple of light bulb moments where you're like, oh shit, I wish I'd been doing that from the beginning, or oh my God, this is going to change my life.
I don't know, to be honest. That's a really hard question. I don't know if I had any light bulb moments. I think, to be honest, I've just been like bumbling along since 2011, to be honest. I think as I got more into it, I definitely realized what I was doing wrong and what I could do to improve. I think for a long time I just didn't care about the photos on my site, and now I couldn't care more about the photos on my site. For ages I thought, oh yeah, I just use my phone or like whatever, and that's fine if you don't mind. But I've always loved photography, and my dad's really passionate about photography as well, so he's taught me a lot. And the photos on my blog are really important to me now, and I wish that I'd realised that sooner, basically. But yeah, I can't think of any kind of like light bulb moments I had, apart from that I knew I wanted to take it more seriously. I knew that I wanted to make more of a success of it because I was spending so much time on it. I thought, if I'm going to spend this much time on this website, you know, and away from my family and friends at some point, then I ought to try and make it at least a little bit successful.
So how did you do it? Because you did make it successful, and you're a freelancer. You have obviously like quite a massively broad freelance, I don't know, how to say it. Like, you've got a separate website for your blogger outreach and consultancy and the PR side of things, but also you are a successful blogger, like that stands alone. You've won awards and you go on press trips and stuff like that. So for a newer blogger, they would definitely be looking at you and saying, how did you get there?
Isn't it funny, though, that when you're there, it kind of just feels like, no.
I know.
It doesn't feel that way at all.
That's so funny. I think that's, I completely understand it, but I think that's really probably comforting, reassuring for newer bloggers that you kind of, you always feel like there's someone more successful.
Absolutely. And you always feel as though you're never quite getting it right I don't think you ever get to a point in any career where you're like, do you know what? I've made it now. Because it's, when you're in it, you don't realize, you're just kind of like, yeah, I'm just going to publish another blog post. And I never get to my desk in the morning and go, right, Beverly, award-winning blogger. Let's smash it. I'm just like, oh my God, I need a coffee. And what have I got to write today? Oh my God.
I feel exactly the same.
Oh, I'm so glad.
What is the favorite parts of blogging for you?
Writing, definitely. Which is, I mean, that's just normal for a blogger, I think. Mm. Writing and taking photos. I mean, obviously the travel aspect, but for the most part, I pay for that myself. So really, I think it's more part of my life rather than part of blogging in general. The writing, I've always loved writing. And my mum has always said that I should write a book. And I just feel like that's a lot of pressure to get from your mum.
I like it.
Well, I think she thinks that maybe writing a book is really, really simple. And there's publishers lined up outside my flat waiting to publish me, which is absolutely not the case. I've always loved writing. And I've got a couple of writing styles that I use on Pack Your Passport. One of them is quite... it is something that you could possibly put in a book. And I've definitely had people comment and say, this is kind of like book material type stuff, which is... a massive compliment. And I have been sat at my desk at some points, you know, like bawling my eyes out if people are nice to me. But then the more practical, the more just my voice, basically, just writing as if I'm just, you know, we're just having a chat. It's definitely the writing bit that I love, because I would write whatever even if I didn't have a blog. So
I think that's one of the most important parts that new bloggers need to know, because if you don't love writing, I'm sure people do succeed if they don't love writing, but I'm not really sure how.
No, I'm not sure how either.
Because I think, you have to do it for that. You have to do it for that above all else. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about SEO, because in your previous life, you worked for a big SEO company.
Yes.
Did that help? Because I am terrible with SEO personally. I know the real basics and I don't follow the things that I'm supposed to at all, all of the time.
It helped in terms of the basics. To be honest, I don't think there was any kind of information where I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go home and implement that. But I think just being in that environment where people were massively geeky and really, really passionate about SEO and about marketing, that kind of, it definitely helped when it came to deciding, I was writing my next blog post and deciding what I wanted it to rank for and how I was going to go about it. I'm definitely not an SEO expert, I think just being in that environment definitely helped,
But when you write a blog post, when you sit down to write a blog post, do you already have in your mind, this is the keyword that I want it to rank for?
Now you've asked that, I just realised that probably I do, but I thought that everybody did that, but perhaps not, I don't know.
I do that now, but, and actually, I think after a certain amount of time, it's not like a robotic process, you just do it automatically, you have it in your mind,
You're
crafting a title or whatever. But at the beginning, I think that's something that feels like quite a mystery. You know that you should be optimizing, you know that you should be focusing on SEO for your blog, but you don't really know what it means.
Absolutely. And things have changed so much in SEO over the past few years as well. I mean, it was once the case that if you, and I feel like I'm just, I might get some of this wrong, SEO people, so I apologize, but I feel as though a few years ago, you could keyword stuff to your heart's content, really. You know, if you wanted to rank for Amsterdam brunch, just stick that all over your blog post. And you'd be away. Now, obviously things have changed. And you can't do that anymore, which is a really good thing. Nobody wants to read a blog post that's stuffed with the same keyword in every other sentence. I mean, it doesn't flow. It doesn't read nicely.
And that's the reason for anyone listening who doesn't understand what we're talking about. The reason, so Google algorithm has got more and more and more sophisticated, and they're trying to cut out bots who will just, like Beverly's saying, just stick the keyword in at the end, like completely out of context, throughout the whole blog post.
They read terribly. You'd read it and be like, "What? Who wrote this? It would sound awful." Whereas now, as long as you've got it in your SEO title, in your URL, which you can obviously customize, in your title of your blog post, and you've used your keyword a few times, and you've got your keywords in your alt tags of your images, that kind of thing, that it all definitely helps.
Do you know something that I didn't realize until maybe 18 months ago, which is embarrassing to admit, but I'll admit it.
We're all friends here.
alt tags. So the alt tags are, it's to do with your images. What they should be is, you should have your keyword in there, but it should be a description of the
photo. It should be, yeah.
I did not know that.
So oh, really?
I was just, no, I didn't know that at all. So my alt tags, if you Google and then use image, and then click on image, if you're looking at images that you've Googled or whatever, of a keyword, I'm not explaining this very well, that's how you get them. So if you've taken a picture of yourself smiling, it should be smiling brunette lady, with your keyword as well. You need to like weave it all in.
Yeah, that's
correct.
Yes, that's definitely right. Yeah. So, they're there purely because, so it helps with people searching. So if you've put something completely irrelevant, that literally helps no one.
Yeah, which is what I was doing all the time.
Yeah. Oh. And also for visually impaired people as well, it really, really helps, with knowing, what's on the page. If they're using, a kind of program to read out blogs and read out, stuff on the internet to them as well. So your alt tags are really, it's important for SEO, but it's even more important for accessibility to actually describe what's in the photo. If it's a photo of a really nice, brunch or really nice, view over Paris or something, write that. Literally, right. View over Paris. That's what you need to write.
Can you imagine? I feel even worse now.
No.
These poor people who are looking at my completely unrelated picture, like, what the fuck?
At least you know now.
Yeah. I know now, but I still sometimes leave the old tags blank. I'm really bad.
I do that as well sometimes, especially if I've got, you know, a lot of photos to post. I'm like, I really don't need to do this on everyone, surely.
I know, surely. Please don't make me.
Please.
So we've covered all the SEO things that everybody else should be doing, but we definitely are.
Yes.
I think Yoast helped me a lot, Yoast SEO plugin.
Definitely.
Because basically that takes all of the hard work out of SEO.
It really
does. It even has a readability gauge now.
I love that readability gauge.
Me too.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Except that often I start a sentence with the same word a few times, and
it
gets really annoyed.
Yeah,
and I'm like, screw you. That's my style.
My blog post, I do what I want.
Yeah. Are there any other amazing plugins? Because I would imagine that the majority of people do use WordPress. I think people are starting to use Squarespace a lot now.
Yeah, I think on WordPress, Yoast is what I use, all the all-in-one SEO pack. Mm-hmm. But I've been using Yoast for absolutely years, and I just, like you say, it's so simple to use, and it really does. It helps with your SEO, and it helps spell it out for you. It literally says, what do you want this to rank for? And gives you, help with your titles and things like that. It will tell you, do you know what, you've used this keyword this many times, that's fine. You've got X amount of no followed links, X amount of followed links. It will say things like, your SEO title's fine, but you might want to move your keyword to the front. And I never do that. It just never
fits.
But that really does help. And I think for new bloggers as well, when you've really no idea what you're doing in terms of SEO, and SEO, I mean, it's not the most important thing in the world, but if you want your blog to be successful outside of Twitter and outside of sharing your blog posts on social media or outside of the blogosphere even, then it helps. It definitely helps to really do it properly and to widen your audience, really. If you're ranking for stuff and ranking for things that are relevant to what you write about and what you're passionate about, then people are going to find you.
I mean, that's basically it, isn't it? It's kind of taking off the invisibility cloak.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of bloggers get into a little bit of a rut of writing for other bloggers, and that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but it does limit you somewhat because, you know, Joe Blogs looking for a holiday if you're writing about travel, or, you know, a normal person looking for makeup tips or whatever, they might not be on Twitter and Facebook, and they might not even be following you and not even know you exist. So SEO is very important for that.
These are amazing tips. I forgot I had a really good point then, and I've completely
forgotten
it. No, you're fine. It's my fault. It's baby brain. My point was actually about something else that shamefully I didn't know. Oh, yes, got it. So I wanted to ask you, working with brands, specifically with your blog when you're doing partnerships and stuff like that, no follow links and do follow links and things like that can be a minefield.
It is an absolute minefield, yeah.
Can you explain it in a nice layperson's way? Because I didn't even realise until last year that you have to use nofollow links if it's like an affiliate link or if it's something, you know, I don't even know if that's correct.
It is. The in layman's terms, if you've been paid for something, then it needs to be a nofollowed link.
And why does it need to?
That's a really good question.
As I understand it, it's to do with the fact that, so no follow literally means it's like an instruction to the Google, the spider bot.
When they
crawl your site, they'll look at links and they'll follow them. And if you say, don't follow this link, it will stop. It won't follow it.
That's exactly
so right. It's like it's counting it as irrelevant.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, if you get paid for something, I think it's to do with the company shouldn't get extra rewards from Google for paying you. I think that's what it is. I'm sure somebody will correct me, but
yeah, it's a massive minefield. And even having worked in SEO, it's difficult because things are changing all the time. When I worked as a PR consultant, we were primarily working with journalists. So we really had no kind of like connection with stuff like that. We were obviously looking all the time for a followed link because we were doing all this digital PR in order to help our clients rank. But it was beyond our control. And we weren't paying journalists, obviously, because they get paid themselves, which is a whole other vlogger journalist thing.
That's interesting, actually, the difference between a blogger and a journalist.
Definitely. And obviously, because you are a journalist as well, you can see both sides of that as well, I should think.
Yeah, and that takes us quite nicely to a topic that I'm always interested to talk to other bloggers about, which is press trips, because I've been on press trips as a blogger and as a journalist, and I find it a lot easier as a journalist.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting.
It's a lot easier.
Yeah, I can see why it would be easier, having been on a press trip with a journalist.
Yeah. who doesn't have to be on their phone, they don't have to be doing social media.
It looked like the absolute dream, Lucy, I'm not going to lie.
Honestly, it is.
She was lovely. I think she was from maybe Hello Magazine or OK Magazine. and we went to a hotel in Ireland, and she was literally just there to write about the hotel and didn't have to take photos or anything because they would be supplied by the PR.
Yeah.
And I was there with my camera and my notebook and doing videos, mm-hmm. writing up my notes in the evening. And I was like, wow, I've chosen the wrong job.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely benefits to being a blogger on a press trip.
Oh, definitely.
But I would say for me, I much prefer doing press trips as a journalist. Because yeah, you do get to enjoy the holiday. So that's another thing that for newer bloggers, especially within travel, I think it is within travel. The goal is often to go on a press trip. And I would caution against, I would like have that dream, definitely. They're really good fun, but it's not a free holiday.
It's absolutely not a free holiday. And I get really frustrated when people think it is, especially when I was working full time and I would get invited on a press trip and actually take time off from my job. Now I can go obviously whenever I want pretty much because I'm freelance, but when I was working full time, my co-workers would definitely be like, oh wow, I can't believe you get to go on a free holiday, amazing. And on one hand, yeah, I mean, it's absolutely incredible, and I will never ever not be grateful to be given those opportunities. And I am very proud to have built up a blog that that PRs can look at and know that they want their client to be featured on there. That's totally fine, but it's definitely not a free holiday. No way.
It's hard work. Monica has some really, really good tips about press trip etiquette. Do you have anything from your time going on press trips that you'd like to share?
I think, yeah, I mean, you just have to stay professional at all times. I mean, if the PR comes with you, that's fine. I just think, yeah, politeness, it goes a long way, definitely. I think write notes, take a notebook if you can, or like a little dictaphone or something on your phone that you can record things on, because you literally do so much on a press trip that you get home and often can't remember what the restaurant was called, what you actually had to eat, or a conversation you have with someone where you learned something that you wanted to use in a blog post. So yeah, write notes if you can. And I always find that difficult because, on a press trip, you've often got, in one hand, you've got your phone, in the other, you've got your camera, and then you're trying to also concentrate on somebody that's talking to you as well. And it can feel a bit overwhelming, but, yeah, always try and write notes, and just stay alert and just take loads and loads of photos. Yeah. I've been on press trips, people just don't bother really.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, that's not good because you need to be able to write about the trip when you get home, obviously.
I find that the taking of pictures kind of counts as my note taking sometimes. So
yeah, that is a good point. Yeah.
I'll sometimes, and I tend to the same night, I'll look at the pictures and that will jog my memory, and then I'll add to my notes.
That's a good idea.
Quite helpful. Also, I would recommend bringing a boyfriend or a husband along if you can. Mine is really well trained. Speaking of Instagram, what is your favourite type of social media to participate in? And also, because I feel like Instagram just gets a really bad rap these days. Just this morning I was on Twitter and I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 of my followers were like, oh, Instagram has been a bloody nightmare this week because they've changed the algorithm. And it's really disheartening, I think, because you put in a lot of effort into social media as a blogger.
Yeah, it is. It's really frustrating. And it's really frustrating as a social media manager as well, obviously.
Because, oh my God, yeah.
because so much of the time, especially on Facebook, my clients, their posts won't get seen. And so we have to pay to boost them, which is fine, but yeah, it can get frustrating. I think, for me, Twitter will probably always be my favorite because it's the first social network that I was on. I would say, professionally as a blogger, and I got my Twitter handle literally as soon as I started my blog. And it's where I met so many bloggers who I'm now, still friends with, still chat to, who were, either just starting blogging in 2011 or have been blogging for a couple of years. So people like Monica from the Travel Hack, Chris and Kirsty from No Place to Be, Chris from, he runs a backpacking blog and he lives in Australia now, obviously one of my favourite places. So many people that I still speak to now, and it just, I think that's why I've got quite a large following on Twitter now, is because A, I've been on it for, you know, 6 or 7 years now, and it's changed a lot since then, obviously, but I think I just always put the effort into it because it's where I got a lot of traffic from, it's where I had nice conversations with my friends, and I just, I really, really liked it. I love Instagram, though, because it's really nice to be creative with it. Mm. I absolutely love using Instagram stories. When they first came out, I absolutely love it. When they first came out, I was like, ugh, no, it's just, you know, why are they trying to be Snapchat? This is awful, because I tried to use Snapchat about a year ago and I thought this is not for me. Yeah. And I realized, why am I trying to build a brand new following on a brand new network when I've already got a following on Instagram? Why am I trying to do something else? If I'm going to build up a following, I want to concentrate on this one thing. So I got rid of Snapchat. And, started using Instagram a bit more. And then when stories came out, I was not on board. But yeah. Now I absolutely love it. And genuinely, I think I might be obsessed with Instagram stories.
Oh, me too. I love it.
Yes, not just me.
No, I love it. I love doing them. I love trying to be creative. I love them. What are your top tips for stories?
Oh, this is interesting. Okay, so I think mix it up a bit. So do videos and also do your boomerangs and your still photos as well. I think try and be really creative with it. It's tempting to just stick any old crap up, but try and be as creative as you can. For me, when I publish new blog posts now, I specifically go into Canva, which, side note, also a dream for bloggers.
Oh, yes, Canva, yeah. Very easy.
So, I go into Canva and I make Instagram story slides.
Do you? That's brilliant. That's a really good tip.
Yeah, and the reason I do that is because you see brands doing it, and I think it's important to use Instagram stories to show a behind the scenes person and to show what you're really like, because I think that really helps in terms of building an audience and a relationship with your followers. However, I think if you look professional, people are going to want to read your blog posts. Instagram's not great at driving traffic because you can't really link, except you've got that swipe up magic, which I don't.
No, I don't have that either.
No. So I just think it's fun to do that. I think it's better to look more professional.
That's really clever. That's such a good tip. So
what I normally do is, I normally make a Pinterest image on Canva anyway to go at the end of a blog post. And what I do is I just scale that down or redo it in Canva for the dimensions of an Instagram story slide.
Ah, yes, because you can do that. You can do the magic, can't you?
Yeah,
it's actually called magic, like magic button or something.
Yeah. So I just do that. And so I make the Pinterest image smaller. And then I might use, straight after putting that up on stories, I might use a couple of images from a couple of vertical images from the post itself and just say featuring this amazing brunch or this amazing place. And then encourage people to go to my profile where I always put the link of my latest blog post. My biggest Instagram story tip, though, is from a follower who messaged me after I'd been doing a few talking to camera videos on Instagram stories. And it really hadn't crossed my mind, which I think is a massive privilege on my part. It hadn't crossed my mind about accessibility, to be perfectly honest with you. I think it's something that people unfortunately don't think about, but they definitely need to think about more. My biggest tip is, if you're going to talk to the camera, at least annotate something from what you're saying.
Okay. And by that you mean write something like, I'm chatting about this, or I often will say click through because this is boring mother chat.
Yeah. I've seen you do that, and yeah, I mean, I'm always interested in what you have to say anyway, but
thank you.
Yeah, I can see why you do that, but I just think it's really important, because often I'm watching Instagram stories on, you know, on a train or something. I can't have people chatting. But for the most part, for people that aren't watching and just listening, it's good to at least put what you're talking about, or, you know, having a rant and then have your rant, but at least people know.
They know whether they want to switch the sound on or whatever. And actually, yeah. Instagram stories have this really cool little emoji now, and it says sound on.
Yes, so I love that.
So which is really useful. So sometimes I use that because exactly the same. If you're a lot of people... will be watching Instagram stories on their commute, and they need to know if they need to put their headphones in.
Yeah, exactly.
So where can everyone find you online?
So my blog is pack-your-passport.com. Note to new bloggers, if you haven't already bought your domain name, don't buy one with hyphens. It's a really bad idea. it's just really bad. On Twitter, I'm... PCK your passport, and everywhere else I'm pack your passport.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Lucy.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. And if you like this episode or any of the other episodes, please think about giving me a lovely rating on iTunes. I really appreciate it. If you want to connect with me, head over to my blog, wanderloose.com, or hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Pinterest, where I'm @wanderlooseblog.